AFP Audio today is talking to Dr. Gillian Eastgate. Hi, Gillian.
Hi, Carolyn.
So Gillian is one of the authors of an article in the research section of the March 2012 edition of Australian Family Physician titled Intellectual Disability, Sexuality and Sexual Abuse Prevention, a study of family members and support workers. And if you're thinking this sounds slightly familiar, you might recall that in 2011, in April, we discussed with Gillian some articles in that edition on a similar topic. Gillian's a GP at the Queensland Centre for Intellectual and Developmental Disability at Mater Hospital and the University of Queensland, and at the time of completing the research was a PhD Red Research Fellow at Bond University. So today we're talking about research looking at the perspectives of family and workers. Gillian, getting down to the specifics, what was the objective of this study?
Well, when I spoke with women with intellectual disability for the study you talked about last year, it was quite clear that they had very limited sexual knowledge. They'd had some very bad sexual experiences, a lot of abusive experiences, and they often didn't feel there was anyone they could talk to about sex. So I wanted to go one step further and find out what was happening from the viewpoint of the family members and support workers who might be in a position to offer them some support.
And so that was the objective of this study, to look at those perspectives.
That's exactly right. Yeah. This study was a series of interviews and focus groups with both family members and support workers involved with adults with intellectual disability.
And the article actually outlines that it was a combination of interviews and focus groups.
Yes.
And then you were coded and thematically, they transcribed and then thematically coded.
Yes, that's right.
And there's full details there if people want to read the method in the article. But getting on to, what did you find?
Okay, well, there were a number of themes that the findings seemed to fall into. So I'll go through those bit by bit. The first one was their views on sexuality. Nearly all participants said that people with intellectual disability had a right to healthy sexual relationships. But interestingly, when the issue was probed a little bit further, quite a few admitted that they were actually also quite uncomfortable with the subject. They were especially uncomfortable about the consent and legal issues around intellectual disability. The laws are really quite confusing. People were worried that they might be actually supporting something illegal, and they found it really difficult to know whether a person with intellectual disability had capacity to consent and what they actually wanted. The next theme was relationships. They did support healthy relationships for people with intellectual disability, but participants in this study said the people they cared for found it really hard to find potential partners. When they did find someone, they found it difficult to negotiate relationships. They had some very unrealistic ideas about what a relationship was like. It tended to be like something out of a soap opera rather than reality. And a lot of them had quite poor social skills and communication difficulties that made that really unachievable. People were seen as quite disempowered as well. Many people had been coerced into doing things they didn't want to do, and the coercion involved maybe threats, maybe promises. One person was reported as having said, "I really didn't want to have sex with these guys, Mum, but they said they were my friends." And some people just weren't assertive enough to refuse unwanted contact.
So the disempowerment was of the people with the intellectual
disability rather than the carers. Were noting that the people they cared for were quite disempowered.
Yep. And so I think one of the other areas that the next theme that perhaps came up related to the sex industry?
Yes, that was quite interesting. A number of people reported that those they supported had been accessing things like peep shows, topless bars, prostitutes. And they did acknowledge that it was their right to do that, but they were also concerned about the risks and concerned about the really unhealthy view of sex that was implied in those contexts, and that people would mistake that for a sexual relationship.
And on that, or perhaps in the next step of that, was also then the relationship about technology and exploitation.
Yes, this was interesting and quite new. I didn't find anything about it in any of the articles that I reviewed. There were quite a few reports about people using things like mobile phone chat sites, and that these got very sexual very quickly, that people were using internet dating services. but people often didn't have the judgment to see it as just internet, and they were doing things like getting addresses and going to someone's house after chatting online. This was a really big risk for abuse, obviously. And it does seem to be a new problem coming out of new technology that hasn't really been fully explored yet.
Yeah. And I suppose it leads into the next theme, which related to exploitation and sexual abuse. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, the women I interviewed a couple of years ago nearly all said that they had experienced some kind of exploitation and abuse. Certainly their family members and support workers were saying the same thing, that this was a huge problem. It was a problem with people not having good boundaries. It was a problem when someone wanted a relationship, but then they weren't able to negotiate what they wanted and didn't want. A particular issue was if someone was in a consenting relationship, but then other things happened that they hadn't given their consent to. For example, one story told was about a young woman whose partner took a video of them having sex and then put it on the internet. The sex had been consensual, but certainly broadcasting the video wasn't, and it wasn't quite clear whether she knew about or had wanted the video to be made. So it became layers of quite complex issues around it.
And even if one participant doesn't have an intellectual disability, I mean, I think already we're finding the courts are struggling with some of those issues anyway.
Indeed we are. It is an issue in the general community, but it's a much more compounded issue when you have someone involved with an intellectual disability who you aren't quite sure whether they understand what's happening.
Yeah. And so one of the things that did also come up was about sexual knowledge and education.
Yes. The gaps that people were reporting were very similar to some of the ones I found when I interviewed women myself. Someone reported a 50-year-old who thought that babies come out of your belly button and reflected, well, if they don't know that, then what else don't they know? They were concerned about lack of knowledge, but that was only a really small part. They were much more broadly concerned that people had no knowledge, they had no support, they had no networks, and that they really needed constant reinforcement, constant education, constant support that just wasn't there.
Yeah. And so, in what were their views on support for sexual relationships?
Both family members and support workers said that they wanted to be able to support healthy sexual relationships, but that they found it really difficult. They didn't know how to do it. They didn't know how to be clear about what the person really wanted. They found it difficult to step back and give their support to activities that might possibly be risky. They didn't know when to try to take control, when to say, well, this person's an adult, they can decide for themselves. They found the whole thing really confusing, and they really wanted some guidance with this.
And then there were some, I'll call them, not quite mundane, but common issues around sexual health issues and things like contraception and things like that.
Yes. Contraception they found a bit easier. If someone was able to negotiate or think about a sexual relationship, most people who said anything about it were quite happy to say, well, yes, I'm happy to go along with someone and think about the contraception. Some of them had had varying responses from the doctors they went to. It was really more about the relationships themselves than the getting contraception, although some said that they were concerned about sterilisation. It's now illegal to seek sterilisation for someone with an intellectual disability without a medical reason, but there's a fair flavour that this is still happening and that support workers and family members aren't quite sure what to do about it.
Yep. And then I suppose the outcome of sexual activity can be parenting. And what was the views of the family members and workers here?
This was the one area where there was quite a bit of disagreement. Support workers were more along the line of, well, they do have a right to have children and they need support with those children, but it's really, really difficult because there isn't very much support available. Family members were quite frightened by that whole prospect and thought, well, particularly mothers, thought, if my adult child with an intellectual disability has a child, I'm going to be left looking after this child, and I'm really not sure that that's what I want, and it's a very scary prospect.
Possibly a difference between, the end of a support worker relationship where there is a clearly defined end.
Yes.
And the
yes.
parent relationship that doesn't have any end point.
Yes, I think that's very much the case.
Yes. So how did you interpret these findings overall?
I guess overall, this is an ongoing issue that isn't going to go away. People's sexual rights are now being recognised, which they weren't perhaps 30, 40, 50 years ago. But we've got the recognition, but without a good framework to really support safe sexual relationships. It's a big struggle for both people with intellectual disability themselves and the people looking after them. They really need more training, more education, more support, more programs, and possibly a bit of clarification of the legal issues around this.
Yep. And so what would... They're probably the sort of then the ideas you would think about for in the future around this. As GPs, what are some of the things that perhaps we could think about and take home as our take-home messages?
Well, particularly for GPs, being aware that you're not just looking after someone who is like a child, that you are looking after an adult. You do need to think about sexual health issues. You do need to try to talk to the person themselves about their sexuality issues. You might need to think about getting their family member or their carer out of the room so that you can ask them about sexual things. And if they do indicate a need, perhaps try to give what support you can.
Okay. Well, and so the article is in, this article we've talked about today is in the March 2012 edition. So I'll just remind readers and listeners, as I did at the beginning, in April 2011, there was a similar research article looking at the perspective of the women with an intellectual disability, and also a clinical article with some of these issues to perhaps give GPs some ideas about dealing with these sort of issues. So thanks for talking to us today, Gillian.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to get the word out there.